So,
what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to our weekly happy hour here on Trending. I hope everyone had a wonderful Mother's Day, especially a blessed Mother's Day to all of you moms out there. We're actually going to be discussing in just a minute the joy of giving and how this is part of what mothers teach through their sacrifice. I'll be joined by Devin Schatt. He's from the Fathers of St. Joseph. And gentlemen, we'll be talking about why we do what we do and how significance is part of what drives us. We'll also discuss St. Damian Molokai in light of the world we live in today and why hope makes us happy. So grab your drink, join us for your weekly happy hour here on Trending, addressing topics of happiness, joy, and how we can really get to the root of happiness as Catholics. If you'd like to ask a question, number's 1-888-914-9149. And thank you so much for joining us during our pledge drive. We met our need, and if you were not able to donate, you can still donate. Just head over to relevantradio.com/trending. But we're so thankful for you being a part of our mission here in bringing Christ to you and others through the media. So Mother's Day growing up was very different for me than I think most Mother's Days. In fact, I feel like when we transitioned to more traditional Mother's Day kind of events the last couple of years, it's been different. So when I was a kid, my parents would always help, predominantly my mom, in organizing what was called the Mother's Day Rose Sale for our diocese, the Diocese of San Bernardino in California. And so what would happen is every year there was a massive fundraiser for all the crisis pregnancy centers. And on Saturday, people would volunteer to make single flowered bouquets, and then all of those bouquets would be distributed to all the churches in the diocese. And each church would sell the bouquets so that everyone could buy their mom some roses. And all the proceeds from each parish would go to the local crisis pregnancy center. And so our Mother's Day weekend was a weekend of Saturday up 4 a.m. picking up roses in Los Angeles, and then assembling bouquets all day long with all the pro-life people I personally grew up with my entire life. And then on Sunday, we would be at a parish early in the morning. We'd never wake up that early for Mass, but we did on Mother's Day to sell the bouquets of roses outside of the church, then to make these proceeds go to the crisis pregnancy centers. So Mother's Day was never a traditional Mother's Day. That's right, Patrick. Mother's Day equaled work, equaled volunteering as a family. It included thorns in our hands from a day of dealing with roses and then early mornings that we just weren't used to. And the reason for that is because in our culture today, we face a crisis of motherhood. A crisis where people are confused about the gift of receiving motherhood and of giving motherhood and their loving gifts to others through accepting that gift of motherhood. And so many people today, I think, are scared to be moms because of an option we have called abortion. And so it was an incredible, I think, experience and opportunity for me growing up to always have that example of on Mother's Day, we helped other moms by raising money to support the Crisis Pregnancy Center. It's only been the last handful of years that we haven't had this that we participated in. So I feel like every year we're kind of like, well, what are we doing for Mother's Day? It's different than it has been in the past. But what I learned from my mom's example, especially on Mother's Day, was how we're called to service. And this is fundamental to who we are as people, but especially as mothers. And I was thinking of this, especially in light of Venerable Fulton Sheen. There was a quote that was sent to me by our very own Karen Moran, who has retired here at Relevant Radio from producing Trending, but she's still influencing, little does she know. And the quote from Venerable Fulton Sheen said, "A woman is capable of more sustainable sacrifice than a man." And he goes on to talk about how a man has these heroic, passionate outburst moments versus a woman has these sustainable sacrifices. And he says, a woman is heroic through years, months, and even seconds of daily life. The very repetition of her toils giving them to semblance of commonplace. I thought this was fascinating here because you think about moms and you think about kind of the sacrifices that each of our mothers have shown for us, it's true. It's sustainable. It's ongoing. And juxtapose that, not that we're belittling men in any way, but juxtapose that to kind of those moments that we see heroic thought and heroic outbursts, as Venerable Fulton Sheen says, we see this kind of transformation that mothers show, I think, all of us. That there's this repetition, almost this momentum of sacrifice that is lived in her whole life in a way that is profound, yet so often misunderstood. And I think that this is part of the challenge for many women, why they're so terrified of motherhood. Because they recognize that motherhood changes every single moment of a woman's life. Every single moment. How she's functioning, how she's giving of herself, day to day, month to month. And I think that this is part of the reason why we have this pro-abortion culture at times. Because a lot of women think that they can't meet that standard. A lot of women lack the confidence for the great sacrifice that they saw is what's necessary for motherhood. Whether they received it from their mother or they didn't, they know what they wanted. They know, and many women who didn't have a mom they wish they did, or have a mom who was present, will talk about and often dream of the mother they wish they had. And that's who they want to become as mothers. And again, some women, many women, are terrified. I could never, I remember in college, some of my friends would say, I could never be a mom. And I remember saying, I know it seems that way now, but when the time comes and the right person is there, you will be able to be a mom. And I think that first and foremost, it's because the joy that so many mothers show in giving, especially through Christian motherhood, it's because they have Christ sustaining them. And this is what's so powerful about the specific sacrament of marriage. The end of marriage is a procreation and education of children. God supplies the graces to love your children. God supplies the graces and energy to sustain yourself and your children. And so when we talk about mothers, we see this a joyful sacrifice. Why? It's not just because they have a responsibility for others. It's because Christ has equipped them with a God-given mission to care for their children. And so this is the great, I think, example of what we're celebrating on Mother's Day in a very, very special way. This joyful, sacrificial giving. And so we pose the challenge to tell moms today, especially as Catholics, that they are capable, or future women who want to be moms, that they will be able to do it. And affirm motherhood, because so often in the secular world, we have a lot of women who are crumbling and feel crippled by their lack of self-confidence, by their fear, by their anxiety, by what they hope and they wish to measure up to, but they feel like they can't. This is the gift that Christian motherhood gives, that you are not the end-all be-all as a mother, that Jesus Christ, in the sacrament of what? Of marriage, and the sacrament of the Eucharist, and the sacrament of reconciliation is sustaining and breathing life into motherhood. And so as we talk about motherhood in the 21st century, remember that every conversation, every sorrow, every struggle in motherhood must be united to the cross. And so when you know someone who's struggling in their motherhood, even if they're not Christian, start to open the door. Speak of that dependence you know is so important, or you yourself experience as a mother, of that dependence on Christ and his cross as the model and perfect example for motherhood. You're listening to Trending with Timmeray here on Relevant Radio. Coming up, we're going to be discussing St. Damian Molokai. It's his feast day today. We'll also discuss the significance that drives each of us with Devin Schatt from the Fathers of St. Joseph and why we do what we do. We'll be right back here on Trending during our weekly happy hour, talking about why happiness matters and how you can be a little happier.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeray on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Devin Schatt joins me, Fathers of St. Joseph. He's a speaker and writer. You can find him at fathersofstjoseph.org. We'll post links on social media. And he's joining us during our weekly happy hour here on Trending. He wrote a book titled Why We Do What We Do. And I'm riveted by this whole idea, Devin, of comfort over sacrifice, popularity, all of these things that we tend to seek that puts us in this comparison type of culture in our own head rather than doing what we ultimately desire. So let's talk about your book and some of these ideas of why we do what we do on a daily basis.
Yeah, that sounds great. So why do we do what we do on a daily basis? I think that there's three basic reasons. The first is survival. I mean, you know, whatever it is, if you're out lost at the ocean and you're drowning, you're looking for something you can get your feet fixed on and get stabilized and get to the shore. You know, you're running a marathon, you're getting dehydrated, you grab a bottle of water. That's survival. You know, someone breaks in your house, you grab the gun. That's survival. And then there's survival has its sister form, which is security. That's future survival. We worry about if we're going to have enough money for the kids to go to college, if we're going to be able to retire and all of that. And most of us, though, survival tends to go into the background. It becomes white noise in our Western culture. And so when we get beyond survival, there's another reason why we do what we do, and it's significance. And the Webster's Dictionary defines significance as being worthy of attention, the value of another, to be important to others. But the key here, though, is when we don't achieve a certain level of significance, then what we do is we tend to go into sloth and sensuality. And that's where comfort will make cowards of us all. So we tend to just dive into Netflix or indulging in foods or whatever it is because we failed in the world of becoming significant. But the problem is we don't understand what real significance is. And that's why I wrote the book.
That's, I think, very impactful. I was about to say significant, ironically. First, I checked myself. I think that, you know, so often we hear that many men struggle with self-confidence, that they always feel like they're putting on an act and kind of, you know, just trying to make it look like they've got everything together, but deep down inside, they don't actually feel that way. And I think that these three topics of why do we do what we do, survival, security, and significance, hit on the head of how there can be constant self-doubt in terms of this ability to provide survival, to survive, to provide security, and to feel like you're significant in the culture. And I like how you said the exact opposite, which many people are choosing, is just like kind of drop into the slothful laziness.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because, okay, so significance is a battle. I mean, look at all the social media platforms, whether, you know, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. What's going on there? Everybody wants to be validated. Everybody wants to be known as important or to be valued, right? So that's significance, but that significance gone awry, okay? That's the worldly, idea of significance. But what the word significance in the Latin is significare. And that you break that down, signi means sign and facare means to make. So the idea is with true significance is we're made into a sign that points to something transcendent, something beyond ourselves. And ultimately, it's God, okay? You know, or a great mission that's given by God. And like St. Damian, his feast day today, he signifies God. He directs us toward God in the way that he lived his life. So that's true significance. He's a man of true significance because he became a sign of God.
You know, as I'm thinking about this, I think of significance as kind of getting in the way of this. We have this comparison culture of social media, but then also this idea of power that we tend to chase after with significance. I keep thinking of how it used to be, you know, prior to the cell phone, quick transportation, airplanes, all of that. You used to have a massive kingdoms that there would be a ruler, let's say a king for, and the king would erect a statue in all of his provinces because he couldn't speak to, he couldn't travel automatically to people the way we can today. And so he had a huge image of himself and the icon of a statue to make it clear that this was his domain, that he was significant here, that he had power here, and he was to be obeyed in terms of the laws he created. And so I think so often, Devin, I'd like your thoughts on this. We get the idea of significance wrong when we try to make it about our significance rather than imitating the image and likeness of God, that significant image that was placed on us as people.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. I love that whole idea of the kingdom, the king, and that's perfect because basically there's two extremes of significance. Okay, so the two polar extremes are domination and despair. So, for example, you've got Mao and Hitler and Stalin. I mean, these guys, they wanted the world to worship them, right? They demanded submission. And that's that whole idea when they wanted to be so significant, they wanted that power that you're speaking of. But on the other hand, the other extreme is when we taste a little bit of the fans and the followings. And, you know, we're generating views on YouTube and we're starting to feel important in our Facebook posts. What happens is we can become intoxicated by that, addicted by that, because we begin to feel important. We begin to feel liked, and we're basing our significance on what people think of us or what we're standing for. And in that case, though, that can lead to despair. You know, you've got Marilyn Monroe or, you know, Ernest Hemingway or Robin Williams. You get a taste of it. They want more, but they got to, in a sense, just keeping up, you know, keep up with their image. And the problem with this type of significance is it's, when it's based on what other people think of us, that foundation is shifting sand upon which no man should build his house. Because today they might like you, tomorrow they might not. And so then you change your persona, who you are, your image, all this in order to get them to like you. And pretty soon you're so far from your identity, because we know our identity leads to our destiny. When we get far from our identity, then we no longer can reach our destiny, which is God. So these are the two polar extremes. There's domination and despair. And smack dab in the middle, virtues in the middle, is a third way. And that third way is where we understand we're called to be a sign of something that's objectively good, that's transcendent, that's beyond us. So if I'm a father, I'm an icon of God the Father. I direct my children, my wife, and hopefully the people around me to God the Father. I became a living sign of God.
That's powerful. FathersofSt.Joseph.org is where we can find your work. Share with us a little bit how this ties into your mission at the Fathers of St. Joseph.
Yeah, exactly what you were saying in the beginning is a lot of us guys, we're wanting significance. We're wanting to be important. We're wanting to be valued. But for me personally, I was all about that when I was younger. I wanted to start my own business, which I did. I got into ministry and I liked speaking, and there was a lot of pride involved in there. And when our third daughter, Anna Marie, was born, she was on life support, and my wife saw her for the first time on life support. It was a terrible situation. And she said, "I just need you to come home and be a father. I just need you to come home and be a husband." And for me, that was like, I viewed it as like kind of a second rate vocation. You know, I want to be out in the world. I want to be chasing power and prestige and prominence and power and pleasure and all those things that you were talking about. And fatherhood just kind of happens, doesn't it? I mean, my kids will always love me and they'll grow up to be great, right? Well, no, it isn't like that. And so I had to really wrestle with this idea of, listen, I need to get back to the basics and find out what is so significant, if you will, about being a father. And what I found, and this was the key, that being a father is really actually very hidden. It's very silent. And that's why a lot of guys aren't attracted to it initially. But you know, it's a silent, strong type that actually changed the world. You know, you look at St. Joseph, he was silent and strong, and he changed the world by saving the Savior, especially from Herod. So I just think that that's where a lot of us wrestle, because we have this tendency to want to be noticed, to want to be valued, to be important, to be needed. And yet at times we see fatherhood as a second rate vocation or something that, you know, it'll handle itself on its own.
There was, I think, a study done from your book, I think you were sharing this, that you found that 95% of men in responses chose a category of reasons for why they do what they do that would surprise us, because so often we're choosing not what we want to do, but what makes us kind of just comfortable in terms of getting why. Can you share a little bit about the survey?
Yeah, so we ran the survey by a lot of guys. And so, like, for example, there were six questions. So why do you do what you do? So do you do A, for comfort, or B, for sacrificing for a purpose? Do you do what you do for popularity, or B, to be important in other people's lives? Do you do it for profit and money, or do you do it for meaningful accomplishments? Do you do what you do for self-protection, or to give sacrificially of oneself? Do you do what you do for individual success, or to be a part of a winning team? Or do you do what you do for an external image, or to have real confidence in oneself? And what we found is, even though the category A, comfort, popularity, profit, money, self-protection, individual success, and external image, all those things are good in a way. What we found is almost all the guys, the majority of their answers resided in column B, which were more altruistic answers. Yet almost all of them, including myself, tend to reside in column A. And so there's this discrepancy. Why do we live in column A and yet we want to, in a sense, live by column B? And what it shows is that inside of us, there's a deeper desire for sacrifice, to be heroic, to be truly men who give life to others. And as I said earlier, comfort will make cowards of us all, and no man wants to be a coward. And so that was a little bit of an opening for me to understand this idea of significance.
I keep thinking of the four levels of happiness that Father Robert Spitzer from the Magis Center spells out. And, the lowest level, he talks about, immediate gratification. The second level would be a comparison culture, which many of us struggle with for a very long time. We're bouncing in and out of. The third would be a contributive sense of happiness, where we're contributing, we're giving of ourselves. But fourth would be that ultimate good, unitive with God, that we are contributing. We've let go of the need to contribute, but that we are uniting ourselves in that charitable act, and we're seeing that God is truth, beauty, justice, and goodness. And there's a level of endurance that we're able to maintain in that when we get beyond all of that comparison and the need to contribute, which you even mentioned, you had been trying to change the world with all the contributions you were making, but you missed that was first and foremost at home. And so as you're talking about these kind of two levels, we choose comfort over a sacrificial purpose, or we choose success over being a part of a winning team, or might we even say winning mission, we see that so often we're missing the big picture, even when we think like, oh yeah, I'm doing great, I'm praying, oh yeah, I'm raising a Catholic family. So I guess the question is, how do we take it beyond that?
Wow, I love what you said about the four levels, and the last one being the unitive level. And I think that's huge, because once you taste union with God, gratifications on level one are like in no comparison. And then the comparisons, and I think this is really the key. So there's four truths I think we've really got to believe if we're really going to get past this comparison culture, okay? Giving up on that's the significance thing. When we begin to enter in the comparison culture and find that we can't compare, then we go back down to level one, to gratification. Remember?
Yeah. Just make me feel good. Make me feel better.
Yeah. So, right. I'm going to know this.
Yeah. Or I'll look at one social media post, I'll feel really lousy because I don't have that or I want that. So I'm going to look at 20 million other social media posts to try and find something that makes me feel good.
Exactly. Right. So the key here is this. What it all boils down to is that the devil works in the language of doubt. So the first language that he sows is doubt. And the doubts come in the form of, you're not good enough. You don't have what it takes. You're not beautiful. No one's attracted to you. No one's listening. No one cares. You might as well give up. Et cetera, et cetera. We hear these doubts all the time. We look in the mirror and we're disappointed. Well, but God speaks in the language of hope. And so we can recognize the devil's language right off the bat with doubt. But the key here is this. There's four truths that we have to believe if we're truly going to be significant in this world and get beyond the comparison culture. And that is, the first one is that God really is good, and that all creation that flows out of him is good. So he doesn't make junk. And so that leads us to the second truth, is that he's created you, he's created me in his image and likeness, and which means that we have that goodness crafted in us. It's part of our essence. But the third truth is that God just didn't create us just for slavery or just to exist. He actually created us for himself. And so there was a time, as Colossians says, God created us for him, through him, and by him. So the point here is that God is eternal happiness. He's eternal self-giving love. And he loves what he experiences in the Trinity, in himself, so much that he wants to share this with us. And so you, Timory, he created you at one point, we can't say time, but in eternity, he thought you were a beautiful thought. And he thought of you, and it gave him so much delight that he willed you into existence with love. And that brought him so much joy that he wants you to experience that joy with him for all eternity. But a lot of us don't believe that. We don't believe that God has created us for himself or to give us his joy, his happiness for all eternity. But we have to. And then the key here is this, is that he will see that good work that he, you know, began in us to completion. That's the fourth truth, that he's not going to give up on us, even if we've given up on him, even if we've sinned, even if we've failed, even if we have walked away from our faith. Jesus says, whoever comes to me, I will never reject. So the key here is that all we have to do is return to him and believe that he's good, that we're good because we're creating his image and likeness, that we're created for this incredible, intense, eternal love, and that he will make sure if we keep giving him our yes, that he'll see that to completion, but demands trust to overcome those doubts that the devil sows in our brains.
Sometimes I think the big thing we're missing is remembering that we have Christ in the sacraments and that his grace is enough. You know, how many times do we need to hear his grace is enough, his grace is enough, until we actually believe he will provide the energy, the joy, he will provide the endurance, he will provide, you know, even in those moments of mourning, allowing us to mourn, anything that we experience, he will provide if we rely on him rather than trying to take everything upon our own shoulders.
Absolutely. I mean, he's our strength. He's our rock. I mean, that's real for me. Every day I make a holy hour, Blessed Sacrament, almost every day, as much as I can. And he's my strength. He's my wisdom. And the thing is, this is really a powerful theme for me recently, is I think it's Psalm 32. The psalmist, actually speaking for the Lord, says, "He who takes delight in me, I will grant his desires." And I like to ask people, I'm like, okay, so do you delight in the Lord? You know, you hear so much, I have to go to Mass, you know, or I have to fast on Friday. This is a burden. But when's the last time we delighted in the Lord? And I think the key here is when we begin to look at all that he does for us and all that he gives us, man, all of a sudden you begin to delight in him. And then you see the way he's working in your life. And then all of a sudden he's compounding that by granting you even more than you can ever hope for or imagine, as Ephesians says. So the key here is delighting in the Lord rather than seeing him in religion as a burden. But it boils down to thankfulness. That's the key.
Yeah, gratitude, a thankful makes heart. You happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, it's fascinating because we so often, I think, leave ourselves in prayer on the level of just asking for things. And we forget, you know, so often, you know, people say, you know, I'm praying for God, I'm asking him for this and for that. And then you either get it or you don't get it. And either way, you forget to say thank you. You know, the typical, all of the ill people that came to Christ, and so often he would say, go. And how often did they come back and say thank you to him? Very rarely.
Right.
Very, very rarely. And so that shows that we are more than willing to ask God for something, but we're not willing to be united to him, to be grateful, to understand that what I've been given is from him, and that I have to remain with him in order to move through so that we don't hit this crisis moment yet again. You know, so many people, I think, live from crisis to crisis, and it's because they're not staying with God between the crises, so that nothing is as big of a crisis as it seems.
Oh, yeah. And also, too, because sometimes that's the only way that God can get through to them. You know, I mean, because they're out, in a sense, when we're not living in gratitude and generosity, we're not inside of grace. You know what I mean? In a sense, the bubble of grace. So, like, we're on our own, right? And God, it's not that God's left us, we've left God. And so, God's like trying to speak to us, and we're having this suffering in our life. And he's saying, look, if you can listen to me in this suffering, I can bring you that joy that you're looking for. And I really like to call it the 3G plan, you know, and this is proven by scientists. Like, they were doing research on what makes people happy. And there's three chemicals that are released in the brain. I think it's like dopamine, oxytocin, and serotonin. And when those are all released at once, a person is happy. And now selfish person can have those chemicals released simultaneously, but it's only for a moment, and they have to keep upping the ante to get that fix. Okay. And then eventually it ends in implosion and despair. But the 3G plan, the scientists have proven this, is that if you have gratitude, and gratitude inherently is you have to be thankful to someone else. You just can't be thankful to yourself. So gratitude, thankful I'm me.
Who does that? Yeah. I don't know, maybe people do that. I'm sorry if you do that.
Self-helpers, man. Yeah. So yeah, thank you for giving me me. Well, anyway, so there's gratitude, and you always have to be grateful to someone else, especially to God. But then that gratitude must lead to generosity. That's when you know you're truly grateful, because if you look at what God's given you, you're like, man, I want to share this joy with others, and I want others to experience God, even if they don't know it's me. And this is interesting, because it's proven that when we're generous, it's absolutely proven, whether you're helping someone, on a job site or whatever, helping your mom, or if you're just giving money, there is dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin that's released in your brain. And so you've got gratitude, generosity, and God. And these are the 3 G's. And if you live by those 3 G's, you truly will be happy. And why does Jesus want us to be generous? Because he knows that it will make us happy. It's not because he wants our stinking money. It's not because he wants more of what we can't already give. No, he wants to give us himself. And the way he does that is through our self-giving. Self-giving love is the key to happiness. And that's where your fourth level, unitive, is so key. Because when we give, that's when we live. Because when we use, we lose. And that's when lust and, like Jim O'Day always talks about with the, pornography and all that. When we use, we lose. And we begin to get swallowed up into a black hole of self. But when we're generous, we give, we live, and we become like the light of the sun. And people want to be around us.
And giving really transforms us. We start giving and maybe it's not for the right reason. Sometimes maybe it is to kind of give ourselves a pat on the back, or maybe because it makes us feel good to give. But eventually, through that giving, through that endurance of giving, through seeing the transformation it brings in other people, we see that this is uniting me to others. And ultimately, the purpose for doing this is because it is the ultimate good which God has given each and every single one of us. And so that these are the examples that we learn when we understand that our happiness, we have to understand why we're doing what we're doing, the significance that's driving us, as Devin has written. And I really want to encourage you to check out his book. You can find it at fathersofstjoseph.org. That's fathersofstjoseph.org. Devin, thank you so much for joining us. We'll post links to his website on the show notes. Just head over to relevantradio.com/trending to subscribe to the podcast. I will be back in just a little bit here, and we'll be discussing our topic of today. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Happy hours here on Trending. I've been thinking about this a lot in light of everything that's happened over the last year plus. How we've hit a point in our culture where we have what I've referred to a couple times now as a diseased view of the human person. As if someone walks up to you and you shout, "Ah, leper," and you go running. That's almost the point we're at. Walking down the street, a little kid can't come and show you his rock because the parent's scared and says to stay on the other side of the road. Someone sees you walking, they quickly yank up their mask, look down, and scurry past you. Other people are scared to approach, start a conversation, and it's concerning, especially as people now, you know, say, well, I'm vaccinated, are you vaccinated, or I'm not vaccinated. You know, this debate that occurs, and you feel as if you're a target, as if you've done something wrong when all you're doing is living, trying to carry on with your life. And then there comes this person who says, we need some order here. There comes a person who says we need to return back to the human dimension of understanding that people need human love and human interaction. Someone who also recognizes that ultimately we all need God. That person was St. Damian Molokai of Molokai, who died at the age of 39 years old after ministering for a number of years to a leper colony. They were quarantined on a small island, and St. Damian went there and helped to bring order and basically took charge of the settlement of the lepers. He recognized they need order in their lives. He recognized that their human dimension of human love and interaction was so necessary. He understood that they needed faith to take them somewhere. And he transformed the people and the relationships there. He gave himself and sacrificed to such a profound extent. We've been talking about, why do you do what you do? Well, when you have God, you no longer doubt those moments of fear and anxiety. You no longer create these social separations. I think that this is the example that we have St. Damian of Molokai setting for us today on his feast day. And we need to be reminded of it. You wouldn't have heard St. Damian of Molokai saying, oh, hold on, do we know we have a cure for leprosy? Let me know before I enter the island and help bring order in human interaction and love and God. You didn't hear St. Mother Teresa say this either. You saw them go into the deep where they knew there was a risk for physical safety, for health, for emotional and psychological absolute exhaustion. People would ask St. Mother Teresa, how do you do what you do? I remember there's a story of a man who, as she's caring for all these sick people, he's asking her, you know, Mother, how are you doing? How do you do what you do? How do you continue to do it? And she grabs this tiny little woman, aggressively grabs his arm, and she points at the crucifix and says, you see that? I would not be able to do anything without him. And I think that this is the reminder we see of St. Damian Molokai and St. Mother Teresa, that they were not afraid of illness or disease. They continued to walk forward, one foot in front of the other, saying yes to that sacrifice that God asked them to make. Just like the Blessed Virgin Mary, what's so profound about her motherhood? She said yes. Even in the midst of a storm in her life, all of a sudden she's conceived a child by the power of the Holy Spirit. Saint Joseph is thinking about putting her aside quietly, and what does she do? She says yes. She gives her great fiat, let it be done unto me according to thy word. And I think that this is what we have to learn. Each and every single saint who has walked before us has lived. They have given their yes, each in their own way. But they didn't do it by being afraid. Our Lady didn't do what she did by being afraid. And fear doesn't have to be abolished. Remember, the virtue of courage is to act in the face of fear. It doesn't mean that the fear is gone. It means to still act. And my concern is that if we continue to operate as we have been operating, that we will build and fester and let fear boil over to such an extent that it consumes us, and doesn't just consume us today, tomorrow, next month, a year from now, but consumes a whole new generation coming behind us who will be so afraid of certain human interactions that they will have what St. Damian Molokai and what St. Mother Teresa rejected, and that is they rejected a diseased view of the human person. And the question now is, will you and I also reject this diseased view of the human person, or will we take this as our definition and our excuse for doing the good that God has called us to do? And hold on a second, though. The good God is calling us to do doesn't necessarily mean to be the person that will find a cure for cancer. Doesn't necessarily mean to be the person who is the leader and receives all the accolades. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're the person who takes a shot for another individual. So the simple yes God is asking you to, the simple mission he's asking most of us to, is much simpler and common than we realize, or even that we would like to accept. The mission God is calling us to happens every single day, every single moment. In those opportunities of human interaction and encounter, will we encounter someone with Christ or without Christ? Because if we encounter them with Christ, that will transform how we interact with them. Regardless of what's happening in the world, regardless of a vaccine, regardless of what's happening, I think this is what we have to return to. Getting over our newfound understanding of a diseased attitude of the human person, that has to go away. We can't think of other people as diseased and infectious, especially, remember, COVID-19 is over 99% survivable, which is radically different from what St. Damian Molokai experienced on this colony, in this island of leprosy. He literally died of the leprosy, and he didn't care about the leprosy. What did he care about? He cared about bringing order, human interaction, and faith to an island of people who had been quarantined. Now, are we allowing ourselves as that island of people who are quarantined to be loved the way that they were loved by St. Damian of Molokai? Or are we saying, here, stay an arm's distance away? People today are parched for human interaction, for human love, for human generosity, not just from those they know, but also from strangers. And I'll say that again, we are parched for human interaction and love, not just from those we know, but from strangers as well. I never thought, and I've noticed this in a particular way as well, having moved across the country during COVID and seeing how, you know, when you don't know anyone in a new area, it's easy to use COVID as an excuse of not to say hello, to use COVID as an excuse to not nod your head. Heck, you can't smile, because if you do, many people won't know. Actually, I disagree. You can still see the smiling eyes through a mask. But we're using this, again, quote, diseased view of the human person to prevent us from doing the good that each and every single one of us are called to. Will we allow this to consume us for years to come, or will we say enough is enough? God created me to be a gift, and I myself won't even be happy if I am not contributing and giving to others, giving my whole person. Why? Because Christ did it first. And his sacrifice on the cross was bloody, bruised, and beaten. St. Damian of Molokai's cross, he died of leprosy. He literally gave his life. He founded 6 churches during his time in Hawaii. He dug countless graves for those people who died of leprosy. Remember a moment ago I said we're using this diseased view of the human person today to prevent us from doing the good, and how the good most of us are called to is much simpler and mundane than we realize? St. Damian of Molokai helped dig graves. What are we? Are we willing to say hello? Are we willing to go into the deep and approach people? Perhaps closer than we might think feels safe? Are we willing to break this attitude of viewing another person as a disease That's what this comes back to. And that's what St. Damien of Molokai and St. Mother Teresa of Calcutta and many, many other saints in our Catholic tradition remind us of. That we cannot reduce someone to an illness or to a contagion. We can't reduce someone to the point of socially quarantining them the way the lepers of the colony that St. Damien of Molokai ministered to. He brought order, the human dimension of love and faith. And this is what we also are called to. And so today, on his feast day, we ask in particular the protection and the spiritual intercession of St. Damien of Molokai at a time when we are allowing fear to cripple us from simple human interaction, even from simple order of getting exercise in, of going to church, of walking on the streets and having those simple engagements with other people. May St. Damien of Molokai intercede for us in helping us to overcome this attitude that is not the attitude that Christ called us to. Christ called us to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Will we do that or will we cower in fear? This is the question, because we will only be happy. This is why we're talking about this during our weekly happy hour here on Trending. We will only be happy if we return to that gift of self that we've all been called to. We will only be happy if we start to receive that gift yet again from other people with a simple nod, the gentle smile, the wave, the momentary encounter of conversation from strangers and our loved ones, but most importantly from those people that we encounter throughout our day. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. This brings me to another idea, and that's this. One of the three theological virtues is the virtue of hope. It's graced and fused in us, and it's such an important virtue that is a gift that we receive. On a human level, we can also work toward a greater understanding and dispensation toward hope. But I ponder those lepers in the quarantine colony of Molokai, and how St. Damien of Molokai, by bringing them order, the human dimension of love and interaction and faith, how he helped the lepers there on the colony who were quarantined feel like they belong. And when I say feel like they belong because the human dimension of love and interaction was being ministered to them by St. Damien of Molokai, who was functioning both as a priest and as a physician to these people. But even more so, the dimension of hope, because he was helping them to understand an eternal home and sense of belonging and resting place that they had in God, no matter a disease they may experience. He taught them to live with God and in God, no matter what they faced. It makes me think of the words of Jesus Christ in the gospel, where he tells the apostles as he's preparing them for his death and how he's even preparing them for their own bloody martyrdoms that they will all live, except for the apostle John. All the other apostles die bloody martyrdoms. He was telling them, I've gone to prepare a place for you. He's going to prepare that place because he's reminding us that as he's ministered to us in a human dimension, to his apostles, through those simple human interactions, he's also ministering to them by reminding them that they have a sense of home, a place of belonging. Where? In his Father's house, in the eternal kingdom, in the beatific vision. That sense of belonging reminds us that this is the hope that we so greatly desire. That sense of belonging, that we belong with God, and in that we can rest, we can be in peace. And this is what sustains us in our daily lives. Hope makes us happy. This is partially why it's a theological virtue. And this is why we need to be reminded of it. Do not despair. Remember, Christ is our hope. Christ is our salvation. Christ is our joy. This is why as we face the sorrows and the challenges and the fears and anxieties of life, we don't feel that great. It's okay. Feelings are fleeting. whether it's anxiety or fear, whether it's sorrow or anxiousness or giddiness, they're fleeting. But joy is a virtue. Joy is a virtue rooted in God, that we have a God who loves us, who created us to be with him, who is our resting place. He's our Alpha and our Omega, our beginning and our end. God created us out of a pure act of love, and he chooses for us to be with him out of an act of love. And so will we choose to be with him? Will we choose to have this sense of peace and a sense of belonging, which we're called to have in Christ? Remember, he told us that he's going to prepare a place for us, and that in his home, in his Father's home, there are many rooms. You're listening to Trending with Tim right here on Relevant Radio. I'll be back with you tomorrow. If you're baffled by loved ones, friends, family who went from being Catholic to no longer believing in God at all, we'll talk about that.